Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 56 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games, miniatures, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to you from the beautiful gaming capital of the world, where it got a little snow today.
Yeah, it's 1st of December when we're recording here, and probably got half an inch of snow, maybe.
Yeah, just yeah. I've got a big window outside my, a huge window outside my office, and it was very pretty.
Yeah, yeah. You might notice we're not talking about the Colts because there's really not much to talk about.
Not much going on with the
John
Colts,
and I are going to be drafted as receivers, I think, coming up, just because there's no one left to throw to for Peyton.
Yeah. Well, actually, I could be probably one or two members of the offensive line and be just as offensive.
Oh, my.
But hey, we still stand behind our Colts.
That's right.
They can still make the playoffs. And
it's one game back in the division.
It's not too bad.
And there were, this is what gets me again, not football on. You had Colts fans booing.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on. How spoiled are you?
See, when I lived in Dallas and I was a Dallas Cowboys fan, it was very similar. Like, I think because the culture, again, not football on, but the culture in the Cowboys is very similar to the way the Colts have become, where the Colts have been successful for so many years now that we just sort of expect it.
Yep.
And at a Cowboys game, it's like, when they're doing well, it's dead silent. And when they're doing poorly, they're booing.
Yeah, see, when I have kids, they're going to end up as like Bengals or Bears fans, just because the Colts will be, 2-14 every year, because Peyton right. will have been long retired, so they won't understand when I tell them, oh, it used to be really good.
Peyton will be in the booth like Phil Simms going, exactly. Back in my day, it was pretty good. I don't know why Peyton Manning sounds like Bill Clinton, but anyway, well, enough about football. We're here to talk about games, and lots of games.
Yes, we are.
And what are we talking about this time?
We are giving our annual holiday Christmas, whatever you want to call it, gift guide.
Christmas Hanukkah gift guide.
That's right. We're going to tell you all of the good stuff to get the gamers and non-gamers on your Christmas list.
I'm so excited. And if you listened to our show last year that talked about this, we have some very interesting categories that are a little bit different from your normal gift guide.
That's right. And John is recently back from BGGCon, and he's going to give us the skinny on this was your first or second?
First time.
First time at BGGCon.
Yeah. And in beautiful Dallas, Texas, where I'm kind of grew up. So great time. We have a lot to talk about regarding that con. We've got emails, we've got voicemails, we've got some special guest segment. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, but we're going to start it off with the rundown.
Oh, yeah.
Ho! It's another Christmas song. Whoa! Get ready, brother, for another Christmas song. They play for a month ad infinitum. One day it struck me, someone must write them. So, it's another Christmas song.
All right, before we get started with the rundown, did you like that holiday music?
That was festive.
Thank you. Yeah, you're going to try to be festive in this show. Get
That's
a little festive music there. But before we start, give you our game rundown of what we've been playing, we got to give our due penance and recognition to our great sponsor, Myriad Games. So, Cody, tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, Myriad Games is a sponsor of Game On with Cody and John.
On behalf,
I was getting there.
Oh, sorry.
Friendly professional game stores everywhere, and this is the time of year, of course, above all others, to visit your friendly professional game store. And all of the games that we mention in our gift guide, make sure you get them from your friendly professional game store, or barring anything else, Myriad Games, they will hook you up.
Absolutely. Oh, and we also want to mention that the Myriad Games Presentations podcast, which are a great set of podcasts that talk about all manner of games and do reviews and great stuff like that, they just released their Best of 2010 show. So you might want to pop over to iTunes or to myriadgames.com and check that out and find out what they liked for 2010.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to it.
All right.
What have you been playing?
Okay, so, well, I've been playing stuff with you, mm-hmm. and last week we had an opportunity to do a game night with our friends Sam and Jackie, and got to play two or three games. We played
three games.
We played Thebes, which you finally got an opportunity to play.
Yeah, yeah. I know my reaction in the past episodes wasn't too high, but this was a really fun game.
I listened back, and you were very derisive.
Well, I'm sorry. Let's talk about Pyramid.
Good point. But yeah, you know, we mentioned this before. It's kind of a game about archaeology, nominated for the Spiel des Jahres a couple years ago, and just a great... maybe a gateway game, but it's got the Euro elements to it. It's a good family game, I think.
Yeah, there's enough randomness to keep the Ameritrash people happy.
Yeah, and enough to keep the hardcore Euro gamer extremely frustrated.
That's right.
You know, the best laid plans get kind of thwarted by putting your hand in the bag there. So, played Thebes, and we also played Xscape,
mm-hmm.
a great little dice rolling game. I also had a chance to play Xscape at my brother-in-law's house for Thanksgiving. I was able to introduce that one to some of my family members and played a five-player game of Xscape. And when I first, none of them are really gamers. And so when I first explained the rules, maybe I didn't do a real good job. I was getting kind of some blank stares, but it only took about one time around the table and they went, oh, I get it now. And then it actually was a really fun game for siblings. Because it was, you know, Xscape is a game where you're, you know, placing your dice on this track, and you can bump other people's dice off as you're trying to move around this track on the board, and it's really great if you have sibling rivalry that, you know, yeah. I won't go any spaces, but I'll knock you off, you know, it makes the game go a little bit longer, and it was a lot of fun. So play that with Sam and Jackie as well, and then we also played
Longshot.
That's right. Yeah. I'm kind of stealing your thunder. I'm sorry. This is the stuff we've done together, but
no, it's cool.
Played Longshot, the great light horse racing game, and just had a great time with that one. We've talked about that one before.
I like that game more and more every time I play it.
It's fun.
I really got to add that to the collection.
For me, it maybe is just a little bit too long. Like I I don't know if it's, I guess it would be sped up with more players because the horses would move faster, right? But it just seemed like it goes on about 15 minutes too long for me, but still a great time. I mean, it's of the horse racing games, it's definitely one of my favorites. Let's see, what else have I been playing besides that? Not a whole lot, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been I will say that outside of the realm of board card and RPGs, I did break down on Black Friday and get an Xbox 360.
Oh, my.
Now, I've said many times before that I am not a video gamer. And I think I mentioned last episode that I did happen to download Civilization V and been playing that. And I'm just trying to dabble in this more. I believe so strongly in the idea of the well-rounded gamer, you know, mm-hmm. as when we talk about that all the time here, that I wanted to see what kind of video games might I be able to get involved in that are fun. And so I got an Xbox 360 and I rented Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
The very first one.
Right.
Now, at this point, they're up to like the third one, right?
No. Yeah.
Yeah, the one. Brotherhood one, yeah, was the third one.
That's so right.
But I just wanted to start from the beginning and just check out the gameplay. It's really fun.
It's a cool game.
It's very involved, and it looks like it would be very long. Unfortunately, I just rented it, so I had to take it back in a few days. But the gameplay was very, very cool. And also downloaded from the Xbox Live Arcade the game Portal,
mm-hmm.
which I, you know, it's been out for many years now, and I'm so late to the party on these.
John boldly jumps into 2005.
I know, right? But, you know, that's a very, very cool game. And I like puzzly sort of games, I think. You know, I like games, video game-wise, that don't make me feel stressed. Like, you know, people who play, like, Call of Duty and those sort of games, it's like that. Those games are so much about just, you know, hiding behind stuff, and you might get shot, and you're running out and, you know, killing people. And I just don't want to play games that... I play games to relax. I don't like to have that sort of feeling of that rush. I don't know.
That's how I am with... I played a lot of StarCraft, the original, when it came out.
Uh-huh.
And I was in middle school, high school, played that. And I picked up the sequel, and I found that now as an adult, I'm just more stressed or anything by it, because it's a real-time strategy game,
uh-huh.
and I'm building stuff up, and I'm trying to stay busy, and then someone attacks. I'm like, oh, geez, what do I do? You know, I'm just freaking out over it. So it was more of a stressor than a stress reliever.
That's kind of how I feel, and so that's why I think like the first-person shooter games, I'm not sure if I'm going to be too interested in those, but I'm just trying to find some games that sort of fit in with what I enjoy doing, and I'm thinking about trying some of the other stuff that the Xbox 360 has to offer, like Netflix and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you trying like a trial of that right now?
Yeah, yeah. We do Netflix through the 360. It's fine.
Works pretty well.
Yeah. They've got, you know, ESPNs on there as well.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking for the games that you like, you know, we're doing video game on now, but
it's gaming.
Yeah. The Xbox Live Arcade, a lot of those games, You know, there's a lot of like niche and indie games there that I think will scratch the itch that you're looking for.
Okay, I'll have to check some of those out. But other than that, didn't get as much board and card gaming done as I really wanted to the last couple weeks.
See what you get on Xbox.
Well, I promise this will not take over my life.
For shame.
What have you been playing?
Well, in addition to what you played, Kaylin and I, this is like the Sam and Jackie show, because Kaylin and I played some other games with the two of them.
Game Home with Sam and Jackie.
That's right. I finally got a chance to try the Gamma World RPG.
Oh, yeah.
I picked up the box of that and a couple boosters. And
can you explain just real briefly about what that is? Because I know you. I saw the box when you got it, but is it D&D or what is it?
It uses the D&D 4th edition rules.
Okay.
It's not... They call it D&D Gamma World, but I think that's just a branding thing. Gamma World was an old, in the first edition, D&D days, was an RPG that TSR put out, the company that did D&D.
Yes.
It was like this weird, like, post-apocalyptic, mutated Earth, where you had, like, radioactive yetis and giant cockroaches. It was just like this kind of pulp, stupid, kind of... post-apocalyptic story.
Okay.
And then they've just kind of redone it with this edition, but it all comes in a box and there's a lot of randomness with cards. Different mutations or different items that you find are all done by these cards. And it's meant to be kind of, very short campaigns or one-off. They have rules that go up to level 10, but, it's not like you're going to level 30 like in D&D. It's just short, kind of fun.
Is it a book? Because it looks like it came in a box.
It came in a box, but it has a book, and it has like all the maps and counters that you need. It's very board gamey in a way, just with kind of a rule book.
It's self-contained, though. You just buy that, and you're done. You got what you need.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yep. So I played that, and it was fun. I mean, character creation is definitely wacky. It's really random, and you might be a pyrokinetic yeti or, just these weird...
you might.
Yeah, just all of these kind of weird combinations. And we played through it, and it was fun enough. I was GMing it, and I felt a little... hamstrung just because the adventure that came with it is not very good. It's basically just a series of fights. There's not a lot connecting it.
Oh.
And it ended up in a TPK, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you?
No, I don't play that way. It's just really lucky rolls and really kind of bad rolls on the hero's part. But it was enough to get a taste of it, and it's fine. I think I'd rather just play 4E if I'm going to play that, but... It was a fun enough excursion. It's good for people to get into the hobby, I guess. But
okay.
It was fun enough.
Boy, Wizards of the Coast has been all about that lately. How can we get people into the hobby? The D&D Essentials and the Game of
Thrones. Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of their old guards going over to Pathfinder and sticking with older editions. So they're really getting this younger video game crowd. So they gotta nurture that. And, it's a huge hit.
Really?
With that group? Oh, yeah. There's people who are just buying whatever they're selling for 4E. And it's a fine system. I don't want to sound like I'm against it. But,
it's a new day. It's different.
Yeah, it's very much. And it's not good. It's not bad. It's just different.
Okay.
So, other games we played, Sam was going on and on about this. It's an out-of-print game. It's called Clunker.
Okay.
It's out of print. It's made by that Uwe Rosenberg who did Agricola.
Yeah,
and
that Uwe Rosenberg,
that guy.
Crazy guy.
But this game's actually fun. It's all about you own like a jewelry store. Clunker, I think the closest translation is this like bling, something like that. No, really. And you're selling
all the like German homies are
y'all clunker
wearing their clunker,
but it's all about you're selling, you're selling like things like tongue rings or cat's collars or just different little pieces of jewelry, and what you're trying to do is get certain sets of four jewelry, kind of at a time before you start into other sets. Basically, the more diluted your pool is, the less points you'll score when you get a set.
Okay.
Really basic rules. The fun in this game is that the game's in German, and the name of your shop window is called your Schaufenster.
Ooh.
I think it's like shop window or something like that. Okay. Like if you defenestrate someone, if you throw someone through a window, right? And so basically the fun of the game... And Sam told me he learned this game from Andy Looney. is that you just go around trying to peddle your Schaufenster. It's like, oh, I have a very good Schaufenster for you, because you'll be buying other people's Schaufenster and you're trying to get rid of your stuff. So it's like, oh, you know, John has very attractive Schaufenster. I'll buy it for me. And it's just a goofy game. But wow. Yeah, it turned out to be a lot of fun. And I've been looking for it, and I haven't really, you know, it's not in print anymore. So
that's funny. That's like I've heard about that game, Witch's Brew.
Uh-huh.
The playing the German version of that's kind of fun too, because you say, like, you know, I am the wizard, you know, I am the wolf keeper or something like that, and it's like, ich bin ein Schlangenfanger or something like that. It's got a bunch of goofy German names.
We haven't played Witch's Brew. That's a good game.
Yeah, I gotta get that one out.
Played a game of Say Anything.
Oh wow, it's been a while for that one.
Yep, I got a chance to dust that off, and there's a bit of controversy whether Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes counts as a cartoon character, which I of course he
what?
Does.
What? Of course he does.
Yeah, no. So some people, well, I'm not going to name names, did not think Calvin counted.
But I don't see how it is a character that's
I think they're thinking like animated cartoon. But
oh, okay. Yeah.
But you know, it scored me some points. So there's
Would Hobbes have counted then?
Well, sure. He's cartoon too.
Well, I know, but I mean, the person who had an objection to Calvin being
oh, I don't know.
Okay.
And then we topped it off with some zombie dice, in which I netted a score of 0.
Oh, well done.
So well done for me. A couple other things I played. I introduced Alien Frontiers to my in-laws, and it was very well received. Oh. I think they really liked it. Kaylin and I actually, I played my first two-player game of Alien Frontiers with Kaylin, and I really, really liked it.
Isn't it cool how it scales? Yeah.
That's a very back and forth, almost to take that kind of game. It makes almost a different game.
Especially like the shipyard where you're building your additional dice. There's only one spot, right? Mm-hmm. Only one pair. So that's definitely.
We were going back and forth on the Raiders Outpost.
Oh, really?
We all had a bunch of ships, and we were just kind of just stealing something every turn. It turned out a very close game.
Cool.
I also taught Teach You to my mother and father-in-law, and they seemed to like it. We didn't play a full game, but I think they liked it well enough.
Okay.
I'm good at Teach You. I'm not one to boast.
You are.
I'm pretty good at Teach You.
No, the games we played, you've not been my partner, which means I've lost. Right. Which, I heard about a game that is, I really want to try.
Haggis?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's like a 2-3 player game with that same kind of ladder style trick taking mechanic. So I'd like to check that one out. Let's get that one in.
Let's do it. Now, the last game, you had a confession with the Xbox 360.
All right.
I have a confession, too.
Bellicera.
No, I know. I already made my virtual glue. It's fantastic.
Oh, nice.
The day before Thanksgiving, I think it was, I was just piddling around online, and my old mistress, World of Warcraft, was having a sale.
Oh, my.
Basically, I got to where I was done with the game. I didn't even have the disc or anything anymore. And, you know, it used to be really expensive to get back in because you had to buy the base game and then, like, the two expansions. You know, it'd be $100 just to get current.
Yeah.
They were offering pretty much, it was like $20 for everything to get current.
Really?
And, you know, Kaylin went up to her folks early for Thanksgiving, so I was basically home alone for a few days.
Oh, leave you home alone.
That's right. So, yeah, I got, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, it's... You know, because I had played before and I kind of fell out of it. And I'm like, I'll give it another shot, you know. And nope, it just took a weekend pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, I played it and you know, it's a fun game. It just doesn't scratch my itch. I know a lot of people play it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do it for me. You know, I'd just rather do something else. It feels like I'm always working. It's like I do this job and then I go to this new area and do another job and then go to this area and do yet another job. I never feel like I have successfully beaten the game or, you know, I just always feel like I'm just kind of behind the eight ball. So
now I have a friend back in Texas who is just gotten into World of Warcraft in like the last year, just in the last 12 mm-hmm. months, and has really, really gotten into it, spent lots of time and joined a big guild that defeated the Lich King.
Oh, yeah.
And so he had the video that someone had done of, you know, the video capture of them defeating the Lich King. And I've never played World of Warcraft before. I've actually never sat in front of a computer where it's been played before. I've been able to isolate myself from that for some reason. And it looks really complicated. Like the fighting part of it looked really complicated. Of course, they were doing a raid with like 10 people fighting the Lich King. Yeah. But
early on, it's not too bad. I think the higher end level you get, you know, there you have to be really knowledgeable and really kind of your character has to be very intentionally built for what you want it to do.
Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, it didn't scratch that itch for me, and I just kind of felt it's like I'd rather be playing a board game or spending this money on board games, you know.
Oh, so okay.
And that's not meant to be kind of a, well, I'd rather spend on board games. It's a more pure form of entertainment. Yeah. It's not that at all, because I know we probably have many listeners that play World of Warcraft. I know Scott Nicholson plays World of Warcraft.
That's right.
So, you know, doesn't work for me, may work for you, but I felt like I needed to confess that.
Okay. All right. So,
hopefully I'm absolved. You know,
you are absolved.
I'll talk to Father Dan and buy $500 worth of Myriad stuff.
I don't think he sells any World of Warcraft stuff. So, I think.
No, I have to buy board games for penance, right?
I know. That's right.
I have to buy, like, Demacher and all that. But that ends it for my rundown.
Okay. Well, that's cool. One of the things I did in the last couple of weeks that I didn't mention regarding stuff that I played was I went to Dallas for a board game Geek Con, played a lot more games there. You know, want to talk about that?
Let's do it. Christmas pageant.
So I feel like I've been pretty lucky as a gamer because I live in Indianapolis, the gaming capital of the world, and Gen Con is here, and Gen Con is the reason why I really got so heavily into gaming as a hobby. And then I find out that Board Game Geek Con, you know, which was started by the same guy who started Board Game Geek, Scott Alden and Dirk Sulko, that's in Dallas. Literally like 15 minutes from where I went to high school.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like this convergence of
gaming. Not to mention Origins is three hours on 70.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm definitely in the right place to be a gamer.
Yeah, gamers move to Indianapolis.
Do it. Yeah. And so
Indy.com.
I was able to combine a trip to like a sort of a vacation trip to visit family and friends in Dallas, where I was able to take my wife and kids with me, with a trip to Board Game Geek Con. Now, I wasn't able to go for the full 5 days or so that it was going on, but I did get pretty much two full days on Friday and Saturday at the convention to get a flavor for what it was like. And I got to tell you, I had a really, really good time.
Yeah.
And it is very different from both Gen Con and Origins.
See, I heard it was a lot like the boardroom at Origins.
Well, it is. I mean, that's what I was saying.
Tell us.
As far as the whole convention goes, though, you look at Origins and Gen Con. These are conventions that are big spectacles. Origins less so, but still, Origins has a big dealer hall. Gen Con has the massive super dealer
Their
hall.
Management certainly is a big spectacle.
Heyo!
Thank you.
And so part of your time when you're at Origins or Gen Con is walking around looking at all the products, buying stuff, you know, playing demos of stuff. And then, you know, in the evenings or in late, you know, in your schedule somewhere, you've scheduled games that you're playing, RPGs or LARPs or board game events, things like that, collectible card games. And then, you know, at Origins, a little different from Gen Con because you've got the boardroom, which is this dedicated area for board games. We've mentioned it on multiple different episodes. It's very cool. Board Game Geek Con, like you said, it's almost like they took the boardroom at Origins, expanded it into an entire hotel where all the different rooms and ballrooms in a hotel and just sort of isolated it from every other part of gaming. And that was the thing that I noticed probably more than anything is that all those elements of a normal game convention, of the other game conventions like RPGs, LARPs, costuming, anime, all the fandom stuff that exists in those conventions, collectible card games, not at Board Game Geek Con at all. BGG Con is definitely, it's all just board games, and it's all the people that are, you know, a part of the Board Game Geek community. And so it's just a different element. I saw a guy wearing a big, fuzzy, orange top hat. That was the weirdest guy there.
Yeah.
That was it. Everybody else was just...
No elves, no stormtroopers.
No elf ears. It was just, you know, polo shirts and khakis, you know, and just a whole bunch of people that just love to play board games. I would say that more than 50% of the gaming that's there is European style games. Mm. And that's definitely played out in the fact that they have a main ballroom, which is enormous, that is just full of tables for open gaming. And then they have a Essen room or I guess they called it the Hot Games room, but it ended up being a lot of things that were released at Essen. I guess one of the big draws, it's not so much a draw for me, but one of the big draws of the convention is that they go to Essen in October. And they bring back all these brand new hot games from Essen that just got released in Europe but aren't available in the United States. So you get a chance to play games at this convention that no one else is playing anywhere in the United States. It's real exclusive. Kind of cool. So they had all these games set up in there. Also, and another big draw of the convention, is the game library. Over 3,000 games in this game library. And so it's just shelf after shelf after shelf. It really makes the Cabs game library from Origins look kind of silly.
It's fine.
And it's fine. The Cabs guys
are getting ready to drive over.
Nothing against Cabs. They have a great assortment as well. And, you know, maybe they do have 3,000 games, but it definitely looked more impressive at Vortian BeCon, just shelf after shelf of games.
But you got to remember, the Cabs, it's all in Foot Lockers.
That's true.
I don't want them to break my legs.
No, I'm sorry. It's a wonderful Cabs, wonderful organization.
Now, the BGG library, isn't that either Dirk or Aldi's, like, personal collection?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. And at this point, it might just be in belong to Board Game Geek LLC or whatever. But the thing that impressed me about that game library is that it is just full of every kind of board game. And I'm talking about the things that you see on eBay for $500. You know, those copies of Star Wars The Queen's Gambit and, you know, old versions of Space Hulk and things like that, just sitting on the shelves. I mean, they're not isolated in some special location or something. They did have sort of a shelf for some special collections and that kind of stuff. But everything that's there is available for you to check out and play. I think I even heard kind of I'm not even sure it was a real story or an urban legend of someone pulling an unpunched copy of the original Titan off of the shelf, and basically, you know, Aldi or somebody, you know, who's in charge of it, just saying, go ahead, punch it out, play.
Wow.
You know, because and I loved that about the convention, that it was like, games are meant to be played. And that thing that you may not ever get a chance to play again, pull it out and play it. You know, that's why you're here. That's why you paid your pretty sizable badge fees.
Yeah, how much does it cost?
$75, which is more than a Gen Con badge, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
Or at least on par.
Yeah, but that's what you're paying for. There's also a separate shelves with just those Essen releases, so those new games that you can't get anywhere else. So those were the two main rooms in the convention. But then there was also a lot of other smaller rooms. They basically took over every meeting room in the whole hotel that I could see. They had rooms for the geek chic folks that have the tables.
Yes.
Yeah, they were there and they had some of their tables set up. And they had a room where Funnigan Games, an online retailer, came to sell some of their games. And they had a small set of tables with some product on there. You could definitely tell that wasn't a focus of the convention, was selling anything. But the guys who showed up, they said, you know, next year we'll probably bring more stuff because the reception was real well. It was received very well. One of the things that was very interesting is that they got shipments in of the brand new Sid Meier's Civilization game from Fantasy Flight. And they went, I think they got three separate shipments in over the course of the convention. They all sold out. And so they did real, real well with that.
Real quick, Geek Chic. Yeah. Tables and such.
Yeah.
And when would you ever buy one? I mean, if money were no object, would you buy one?
If money were no object, I might consider buying the coffee table that they have.
Really?
Yeah, they have like a
Kaylin
coffee table.
Said that too. I don't see the appeal of it. That'd be hard to play on, I think. You have to lean over and so low. I'm not trying to dog your imaginary table purchase.
But. No. Well, maybe I'm just thinking of this because I just bought a brand new kitchen table or kitchen dining room table.
It's
just
a nice
few months
table.
Ago.
I
yeah,
like it.
And it's big for gaming and that kind of stuff. But the only other thing I could think of is they have another one that's just sort of like an heirloom dining room table. Mm-hmm. It's a square table that opens up in the
emissary. I think
that might be it. Yeah. So that might be okay, but. I don't know. I'm not really into wargaming, and I'm also just don't tend to leave games set up for a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm...
Not to make this geek chic on.
No, that's fine.
That was Kaylin and I's thing, because we were talking, like, in the future, you know, is this something we want to invest in, a really nice table? Gaming's our main hobby.
Yeah.
Both of us. But, you know, like, the recessed table, it's like, well, we don't really leave games set up. You know, it'd be kind of cool for RPGs, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, I know a table like the Sultan, their big table, I don't see us needing that much space for anything but an RPG.
Yeah.
And it's like you'd be playing on one half of it.
I mean, I don't think it was if you had a dedicated game room where you just wanted to leave stuff set up.
No.
or something that was going to take a really long time, like a really long game of Risk or something. Yeah.
Really nice tables, though.
Yeah, yeah, real nice. So they were all there. And then down the hallway a bit, they had, you know, more kind of open gaming areas. They had a big poker tournament, Texas Hold'em tournament, that was very, very
well
attended.
In Texas.
In Texas, no less. And that was very well attended. Of course, the Spiel podcast had their Spielathon, which was this cool trivia contest that to raise money for their nonprofit organization. Actually, I had an opportunity to be one of the podcasting guest stars in the final round of that. So they had four final teams, and it felt a little bit like dodgeball in elementary school, because the teams got to pick which podcaster they wanted. And that it was me, Steven, and Dave from the Spiel, and then Eric Burgess from Board Game Babylon. And so I felt like I always felt in elementary school, I was the last kid picked. You know? But no, it was fine. And the team that I helped out, they're real nice guys, and they didn't win the big prize, but they had such a huge prize package that every team in the finals ended up getting several free games. So that was pretty cool. Let's see. So what did I play?
What did you play?
Okay. What I played, I didn't play as much as I probably wanted to, but I did get in a lot of games of new games that I wanted to play. One of them, the big one, was Seven Wonders, which was, I think, probably the hottest game coming out of Essen with the most buzz. And this is a civilization themed card game that is for 3 to 7 players and plays in 30 minutes. Regardless of whether you have 3 or 7 players or anything in between.
That's interesting.
And I played 3 games of this at the convention. They had 2 copies. One was the full production copy. The other one was like a prototype that had the final artwork on it.
Right.
But it was like foam core, and you know, the cards were a little bit different. But and so in this game, if you've ever been a part of a Magic the Gathering booster draft, that is pretty much what this game is about, because everybody, there's 3 ages. There's 3 decks of cards, 1, 2, and 3. You pass out all of the cards, and so everybody has a hand of cards. And so on your turn, you're going to take a card that you want to play, and you'll pull it out of that hand and set it down. Everybody will turn those cards over simultaneously. Then you'll pass your hand of cards to the left, and then you'll get the hand of cards from the person to your right. And so then you will look through that and you pick another card. It's basically just like a booster draft. You keep going until you have 2 cards left in your hand, and then you will select one, and then the last card everybody discards.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And so you're trying to build up certain things. There's lots of, like many civilization games, there's lots of paths to victory and ways to get points. And a lot of that is sort of based upon what you're getting past. You know, it's like, I want to try for a scientific victory, you know, but I'm not getting any scientific cards passed to me in my hands there, so I might need to go a different route. Also, the cards that you play have a cost to them, and you can either pay them with resources that you've laid down, or you can pay the player to your left or to your right to use their resources. So if you're not making ore, but the person to your right is making ore, you can pay them 2 coins to use their ore to be able to put down the card that you want.
So it has the social aspect without the sometimes trading block that can happen in Settlers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's a little, it's kind of in between a real interactive card game like Teach You or something like that, you know, and then something like Dominion, which Dominion is kind of multiplayer solitaire unless you use a lot of attack cards. This is sort of in the middle there, because you are kind of doing your own thing, building your civilization, but you got to pay attention to what's going on to your left and your right. One big thing is because at the end of the round, you basically have a military combat step with the player to your left and to your right.
Huh.
So you're trying to build up army cards as well, and then whoever has the most army cards will win that particular conflict and get points or negative points based upon that. So I think one of the funniest things in the game is that you can actually use pay your opponent to use their resources to put down a military card that you then will use against them at the end of the round. So that's kind of
interesting.
Fun. Then there's 3 total decks of cards that go through, and the cards get more powerful and do more stuff. And the very last deck of cards is very, very powerful, kind of comprehensive cards. And so it's very much a building process, but it's only over 30 minutes. Game's done in 30 minutes. Really, the scoring part, it comes with little score sheets. The scoring probably takes about half the time that the game takes.
Oh.
It's actually pretty streamlined, but it takes a while because there's like 7 different ways to get victory points. Maybe six or seven, something like that. And so you have to kind of go around and say, okay, who has points from the blue card? You know, and you go around, 4, 3, 2, 0, you know, and you jot those down, then you add them all up. Anyway, kind of went into a little bit of detail about that. This was by far my favorite game of the convention. It's very light. It's not a super deep game, but it's one that as you play it the first time, you realize that that you're probably not going to play well the first time.
Yeah.
But it's like once you play it that first time, you're like, let's set it up again because I think I could do better next
time. Kind of Dominion-like.
A little bit, yeah. Because I've said that's one of the strengths of Dominion is that if you have a terrible strategy, well, the game will be over in half an hour anyway and you can try again.
Yep.
This is very much the same way. It also scales for the different number of players. So at the bottom of the cards, it says like 5+. So you'll only use that card in a game that has 5 or more players. And so it just kind of scales. So you'll end up with the same basic number of cards per person in every game.
Hmm.
So really, really great game. I think that's going to be, it's going to be Asmodee Editions. It's going to be producing that one in the United States. And I heard that early December, it's going to be shipping. So by the time you hear this episode, it might be available in your local retailer. So go check out your friendly professional game store for that one. I already give it a big buy. I know Cody hasn't played it, but as soon as we get it in, we'll talk about it a little bit more.
Definitely.
All right, so I talked a lot about that one. I did not get a chance to play Sid Meier's Civilization. I did see it played a bunch of different times, but that's one I wanted to wait until we got it in so that you and I could check that one out. Because that one looks pretty cool to me.
Oh, yeah.
I played a game called Vinos,
mm-hmm.
which is about wine.
Okay.
And it is one of the heavier Euro games that I've ever played. It is quite the brain bender. You're building vineyards that are producing wine. You're putting wineries on there and hiring workers. You're doing all this economic stuff with the bank and divesting your investments. And
you're always feeling like you're behind.
You always feel like you're behind. You know, that there's a very limited number of actions, and every action counts so much. This is the only thing I didn't really like about it is it's such a tight game of you could really make a decision that would that's going to hose you. Mm-hmm. Like you feel this real pressure to make that optimal decision, but it's so hard to know what to do. You have to send your wines to a wine fair like 3 times during the game, which is this separate track on the board. Very, very abstracted. I can't even really describe, but that part of it didn't really even make a whole lot of sense to me. But, I think it's very good thematic game. I mean, they seem to like they've really tried to sort of incorporate that into the gameplay. It's just too heavy for me. I hate to say that, but it's just a little bit too much for me. But if you like really heavy, brain-bending Euro games, be on the lookout for Vinos, beautiful artwork and components as well. And then the last one that I want to mention from Board Game Geek Con is I got to play Isla Dorada, which is the new game from Fantasy Flight, which is designed by Bruno Faiduti. It's kind of like Tobago in that you're on an island and you play an expedition that is trying to go to these different cities on the island to collect treasure. Everybody starts off the game with a couple of treasure cards and then a curse card. So the treasure cards will have on them a city name and then a particular amount of treasure points. The curse card will have a city name and then negative points. So your goal in the game, you keep those secret, is that you're trying to get to the cities that have the treasure, and then you're trying to avoid the cities that have the curses. And the way that you do that is that it's not like you have your own pawn in the game. There's one pawn that represents all the players. And so that starts off in the middle, and you have to basically decide where the party is going to go. And this is done by a bidding mechanic where you bid these cards from your hand to go on different paths. So you could start off by saying, I bid 1 to go on this desert path to Bago, you know, and then Cody could say, well, I will bid 2 to go on this jungle path to Walla Walla, you know, and then he basically goes around until, so everybody passes, and then whoever has done the highest bid will have to discard that number of cards for that kind of path. So if you did 3 jungle points, you have to discard 3 jungle cards, and then you would move to that city. And then once you arrive at that city, anybody will turn over any treasure cards that they have, get the points for those. It's very cool because it's kind of light, I guess, but
sounds like it's got a lot of bluffing in it.
It could, and it also has a lot of you could do some sort of misdirection in that, you know, you might want to go to a particular city, but if you see that someone else wants to go there, then you don't have to fight so hard to try to get there, and you might just reap the benefits and be able to save the cards that are in your hand. So the artwork and the components are really, really beautiful. It has these really nice little chunky miniatures that are on
there. It's Fantasy Flight, isn't it?
It is. Uh-huh. Okay. The artwork on the cards is very, very cool. The reference sheet that comes with it is almost indicative of like Small World. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of information on it, but it's really well organized. So I really liked it. It's real light, and I'd put it in the family game category. It's not really much of a brain burner, I don't think, but plays in about a little bit less than an hour. So I'd like to pick that one up. I think that one's going to be real good.
So the con in general.
Yeah.
Is it better than Origins to you? If you had to pick one, like family notwithstanding. I know you have family down there.
Yeah.
If both cost the same amount to go to, you know, for lodging and everything, which one would you have to give the nod to?
I know that I've said several times, we've both said it, that if you had to pick between Gen Con and Origins as a board gamer, that Origins might be your best pick.
Right.
I would say that Board Game Geek Con trumps Origins as far as for board gamers. I don't know how much they're going to expand it next year, but right now they limited to, I think, 1,100 attendees, which is a lot, but they had a lot of space. And it's got that same feel of the boardroom where, you know, if you check out a game from the library, and I did this twice, actually. You go sit down and you set the game up, and they have these little flags that say players needed. You just go and grab a flag and just set it up, you know, on your table, and you will get players in like 5 minutes. You know, I actually didn't see too many players needed flags set up, because usually by the time someone sets one up, there's already people that want to play. So it's got that same kind of like-minded atmosphere of, hey, we're all here to play, and sure, I'll try that new game. And, you know, but it seems like there's even more going on. They have like a puzzle hunt that goes throughout the hotel. It's like a kind of a scavenger hunt. You know, they got the poker tournament, but it's all geared towards board game stuff. And I just think it's a really, really great convention, because it's a convention for players. It's not a convention to go and look at stuff. It's a convention to sit down and play. And you can literally get up early in the morning, stay till late at night, playing the entire time.
Yeah, it seems like something I really want to check out. You know, I've always said I wanted to take, you know, do a pilgrimage and go to PAX one year.
Yeah,
I think that's about everything I could get out of something like PAX. It's more video game and kind of more culture oriented, which I think would be cool to do once. This is something I don't know if it'd be an Origins replacement, because I can drive to Origins much more easily, but right. I'd really like to try this one out. So
yeah.
Maybe we'll get a dual Cody and John appearance at BGG Con next year. Who knows?
That would be very, very cool. So I would highly recommend it if you're able to make it down there. It's kind of at a weird time of year, I guess, being the weekend before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a really, really great time. And I think that's all I have to say about that.
Well, thanks, Forrest. And I think it's time to get into our gift guide.
Let's do it.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring.
All right, it's that time of year, gamers.
Tis the season.
It is time for the holiday Hanukkah, Christmas Quantica, whatever you said.
Uh-huh. Christmas Hanukkah Quantica.
That's right. Gift guide.
Yeah.
Where we, Cody and John, will tell you what to give the gamer and non-gamers in your life to further our glorious hobby.
It's the uncommon gift guide for the common gamer.
It sure is.
Very Don't good. Get too excited.
That's right. All right, John, what is our first category?
Okay, so we got some sort of non-standard categories right here. And, you know, there's lots of good podcasts that do big gift guides. We're just going to go a little different here. We're going to start off with this category.
And we have not shared our list with each other.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing here. So we've got we worked out the categories ahead of time. But, yeah.
No, I worked out the categories ahead of time. You said, looks good to me.
Oh.
Check.
I didn't think that was going to end up on the show.
Sorry.
Here. Yeah, no, we sent each other an email saying, you know, hey, let's come up with some categories for the gift guide. And he sent me a big list. And I was like, oh, those look good.
Looks good.
So
John has to edit it, so you know he does his work on that end.
All right, very good. So we're going to start off with gift for a gateway gamer. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back up one more time. We're going to mainly be talking about board games and card games here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I put a bunch of Xbox 360 games.
No, I'm just saying.
Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. And I tried to go with games that were made recently. Like, I didn't pick anything that was like, you know, 10 years old, but
yeah, me either.
Okay, so more recent games. So, all right, anyway, gift for a gateway gamer after Ticket to Ride.
Yeah,
you know, Cody and I would kind of agree that Ticket to Ride is, you got to have that one if you're a gateway gamer. So Cody, what did you pick as what gift would you give to someone who's kind of a, you know, in the gateway of the hobby?
Mine's a kind of a different one because I don't know how easy it would be to get as a gift, but I said Alien Frontiers.
Really?
Actually, yeah. I think that's a good enough gateway game. It's still kind of a gamery game. It's a step up from Ticket to Ride, but it's not so complex to where you're going to blow newbie gamers out of the water. I think there's enough there to really satisfy their appetite for a good while.
Okay.
So Alien Frontiers.
Very, very good. My gateway gamer gift would be Small World.
I almost picked that one.
Which I think is really cool, especially with the new expansions that have come out. The Be Not Afraid expansion just came out with a whole bunch of new races. And they even had a, I forget what the name of it is, but it's like Tales and Legends or something like that.
Grand Dames of Small World.
There's that one, yeah. The Legends one has like a deck of cards with some standing effects that happen that affect what happens on the board. Yeah. So it's kind of a nice cornucopia of things that you can get for Small World. But I found that people that I've taught this game to, it's a game you can just sort of pick up as you go. And it's like you learn it as you're playing and understand what you're doing. And
you can't go wrong with Days of Wonder for new gamers.
Real colorful. I mean, it was the game of the year last year for the Dice Tower Gaming Awards. So it's a winner.
All right. The next category is the gift for the non-gaming family. If your family doesn't know many games past Monopoly or Yahtzee, this is the category for you. So, John, what would you give for the gift for the non-gaming family?
Okay, well... I hesitate to choose this one because it's not a game that I particularly like, but I think it's probably a good one for a non-gaming family, and that's Forbidden Island.
Oh, okay.
And that's because it's a cooperative game that follows sort of in the same path as Pandemic, as you're on an island and you're trying to save it, keep it from sinking and get these little treasures and that kind of stuff. It's very colorful. It's very inexpensive. I think it retails for less than $20.
Yeah. Very decorative. Comes in a tin.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's something much like a gateway game sort of a thing where you can take non-gamers and introduce them to a different style of game. I almost see a non-gaming family as a gateway gaming family. You know, it's a family that could potentially be gamers if you just showed them the right game. And so I think cooperative games get everybody in the pool and you don't feel as like you're being confrontational. And I think this is a good one to get started. It's not my favorite cooperative game by any means, but I think it's a good one to start off with.
That's a good one. For me, I picked Dixit.
Oh, okay.
Because it's quick to teach and it's different enough. It's probably not like anything they've played before. And I think that is a kind of a good way into these, you know, designer games, as they once were called. You know, these very non-standard games. So, Dixit.
That's a great pick.
Thank you.
Spiel des Jahres winner.
That's right.
2010.
We three kings of Orient are bearing gifts we traverse afar.
All right, so now we move on. We went from the gift for the non-gaming family to now the gift for the gaming family. How do you define a gaming family?
A family that, you know, plays more board games than, you know, Monopoly and Yahtzee. You know, they're not gaming all the time, certainly, but, you know.
But it's a common, on the list of things they would do in the evening, board games would be high on the list.
Yeah, they'll play Ticket to Ride. They'll play, you know, this and that. You know, games aren't foreign to them.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. They're not afraid to try new games.
So what was your pick for a gift for the gaming family?
I picked the new Silver Line edition of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, excellent choice.
I think that's a nice family game. It's a co-op. Plays up to 5. And in what other game can you play a character called Fatty?
Yeah.
And everyone knows Lord of the Rings. At least, you know, the movies have helped with that, even though this is more based on the novels. I think it wins all around. It's a fun game.
Definitely. That's a good pick. My pick we just talked about it in the last segment, but my pick is for the gaming family is actually Seven Wonders. Brand new game, which hopefully will be out for the holiday season here. It's a game that I think requires just a little bit of knowledge of iconography. You know, people who have played things like Race for the Galaxy, or Dominion would be able to fall into this game very quickly. partially I picked this game because it plays up to seven very quickly. So if you had a large family, I know the like Trent Howell from the board game family blog and, mm-hmm. and video reviews, he said sometimes when people have listed family games, you know, he has like a ton of kids, and he's like, well, a game that plays up to five, that's not good for my family. And yeah. Two people sitting there watching, you know. So I like that it plays up to seven and it plays quickly. So, you know, I'm gushing over it, but this was a winner for me. So
very seven good. Wonders. All right.
All right, so we go from now from games for the whole family to a game that you just play with one other person. So,
that's right.
You go ahead.
Sorry. If you have someone that you play a lot of games with, whether it be a spouse or a family member or just a good friend, what gift would you give to your gaming partner for a two-player game, John?
Okay. My choice for a two-player game is the new deck-building game, Ascension Chronicle of the Godslayer. Dominion is, you know, one of my favorite games and is a deck building game, but I think that game plays fine with two, but plays better with three or four. Ascension, I think, plays the best with two, and you know the board is sort of designed to be sort of a dueling sort of a deal there. So I really enjoy that game as deck building games go, and so that would be my pick for a two player game.
My pick was Summoner Wars with all of the different kind of armies they have now and the premium boards. It's really a great two-player game. You get that kind of miniatures combat feel, but it's in cards, so it's inexpensive. You don't have the painting aspect. And it's just a really innovative game. I'm a big fan of Summoner Wars. I don't play it as much as I'd like, but I think that is a two-player game that will keep on giving in this holiday season.
Did you get the new board?
Yeah, I have the boards.
You have to show it to me. Is it cool? Yeah.
Oh, it's nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I hated those paper boards.
But yeah, yeah.
This
it kept the price point low, I guess.
Yeah, these are really nice. If you like the game at all, definitely pick up the boards. And Colby Dosh is a heck of a guy.
So. Heck of a guy.
Heck of a guy. Nice all right. Hat.
Outstanding. Very nice hat. A plaid one.
Yes.
All right, very nice. I wish you one horse open sleigh would come carry me away, but I've been waiting here all day and one just hasn't come my way. I'm not being reverent, but I was hoping for a miracle to hold me, wash me, save me from a righteous. Well, in this very loving holiday season, it would be
inappropriate of us to forget those we really don't like, our true enemies out there. So what gift, John, would you give your enemy?
What gift would I give my enemy? Well, I think that I have to select a game that would be appropriate for someone that I would consider an adversary, and that would be Dungeon Quest.
Ah, yes.
Because that's a game that you lose pretty often. I think they said the win percentage of that is 15-ish%. Mm-hmm. And so what better way to say Merry Christmas to your enemy by giving him a game that he can't possibly win?
You know, you and I thought along the same lines.
Okay.
Because I picked Agricola with all expansions. Oh. Because you always feel like you're losing something, you know. I can't feed my family. I have no house. What am I going to eat, you know?
I got eaten by a dragon.
Exactly. So Agricola just really captures that feeling of despair and hopelessness. And what better way can you really show your enemy what you think of them than by giving them this horrid game?
Is the despair in the game or is that metagame? both, right?
It could be translated in so many ways.
Gotcha.
Okay. Agricola with all expansions for maximum despair.
Outstanding. All right. Well, now let's move on to a game that you we had this category last year. I thought this was a lot of fun. The game that you would ask your rich uncle for.
Mm-hmm.
So that game that's just kind of out of your price range and maybe out of even your close family member's price range. But that distant uncle who's got a big pile of cash.
That's right.
You know, what would you ask your rich uncle for? Cody?
Well, of course, he's going to get me one of the really nice custom Helinski Crokinole boards.
Oh, of course
that
he is.
I lust over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even the standard ones are like $200.
Yeah.
But you can get them, you know, with the custom paint jobs. And I've seen one in person, and they're beauts. I mean, they're just fantastic looking.
I don't think I told you, but when I was at BGGCon, you know, the Helinskis make special boards for BGGCon with the BGG artwork on them. Mm. And I got to see a couple of those, and they're nice.
Yeah, they're really nice. And, you know, the heirloom quality, they hang on the wall. I really got to get one of these. So Helinski Crokinole board for me.
Okay, outstanding.
What did you say?
Well, I picked a game that it's ordinarily would not be an expensive game, but this holiday season is probably going to cost you a pretty penny, and that is Alien Frontiers. Yep. So, I mean, that's a game that's a brand new one that's been sold out.
75 bucks and up on eBay right now.
Yep, I just checked it before it came out. I actually saw a couple of games that were up with the promo card were up around 150 bucks.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, if you want a copy of that, you might have to call Uncle Moneybags to give you a copy of that one for
good
Christmas.
Good choice.
So, all right, let's move on.
I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning. And what was in those ships, all three on Christmas Day?
All right, well, we've talked a lot about video games with John getting an Xbox 360, me relapsing into WoW. But if you've got video game friends that really don't get into the whole board game scene, what gift would you give your video game friend to get them into board gaming?
All right, I picked a game that I'm not sure. You have to have a really – it might be your rich uncle is your best friend because this would be kind of a pricey one. But I chose Space Hulk 3rd Edition, and that's because that game to me has this the same tension with those timers that a good video game has, like a first-person shooter or something like that. And so it's got that sort of spacey, dicey theme. You know, I kind of think of like Half-Life and, you know, Mass Effect and that kind of a thing. You know, and then you've got the timers, which give you that sort of adrenaline feel there. So that would, of course, be a very pricey game. You know, that one's hard to find too. But Space Hulk 3rd Edition for your video game friends.
Good choice. For me, I said, you know, when you think video games, you know, you think of the guys at Penny Arcade and PAX, and the person who's always at PAX, who's a celebrity and maybe shouldn't be, Will Wheaton. And Will Wheaton has talked up Small World.
Oh, gosh.
So, therefore, you must get Small World. And you just say, hey, Will Wheaton, keynote speaker at PAX, really likes Small World. And bam, they're in.
Wow. Your feelings about Will Wheaton are finally out in the open.
He's such a nice guy, but I don't know why he's so popular. But I've seen it in person where...
You do know he was Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, that only just feeds my argument. But, you know, I've seen like on the Penny Arcade forums and how people are just influenced by, you know, they would have never tried Small World or any other board game. And Will Wheaton's like, hey, Small World's the greatest game ever created. And then, bam, they've got a copy and all expansions. So.
Wouldn't that be hilarious if he had, like, mentioned Puerto Rico?
Oh, jeez.
You guys need to try Puerto Rico.
At least he picks good games.
Yeah,
so I'll give him that. So I will say Small World with the Will Wheaton attachment on it.
Oh, very nice. All right, so kind of along the same lines, we talked about video games there. What about if you had a group... if you had someone who wanted to start an RPG group, what gift would you give to help to start an RPG group?
Well, I really can't think of anything better than the new Red Box for D&D.
Okay.
I mean, that's why it was created. You know, you can get in your Edition Wars arguments whether you like 4E or you don't. It's a good system. It's definitely geared to newbies, and the Red Box is really geared to it's the group experience about kind of getting all in this together. So a lot of good introductory box sets. You know, we mentioned the Dragon Age box set, but I would give the nod to the Red Box. It's the most recognizable name, and they do a really good job of bringing your group into the game.
And it is the beginning of the path to retail enlightenment.
That's right. That's right. The trail of spending.
Yep.
And
oh,
you?
Yeah, I selected WEGS.
Oh, yes.
The Wickedly Errant Game System. That's it comes in kind of just a small book with a deck of cards, and it's odds and gods, baby, is the motto.
You have to demo this at a convention.
You really do.
Get the full effect.
And if you can get L. Willie Wickman to run it for you, it's a whole lot of fun. It's like casino style, you know, roll the dice and see what happens, old school D&D style fantasy RPG stuff. And, you know, it's almost meant for one-offs and that kind of stuff. It's probably not as beginner focused as something like the Red Box, but it's definitely something that I think you can just pick up and just run, and you don't have to feel too worried about, am I getting this rule right or this rule wrong? Just roll the dice and, you know, shoot stuff or kill stuff. You know? So that's way.
Good choice. Good choice. All right, our next category is the stocking stuffer category. This involves a game that is cheap, that's under $20, and will fit in a stocking.
That's easy.
So what did you pick?
Zombie Dice.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's in a cylinder. I mean, that, you know, that, so it fits nicely in the stocking. It's, I think it
that's
retails
a no-brainer,
for
yeah.
$15, something like that. It's a great, fun dice game that should be in everybody's stocking. So
I agree, but I will give you my choice. I picked Back to the Future.
Okay.
I think that's, it's, I almost went with Flux, but, you know, there's a lot of haters out there, and it can be pretty random. So Back to the Future, nice light card game, some strategy involved, and everyone knows Back to the Future.
Yep.
So I think it's easy for gamers and non-gamers alike to pick it up, get into it, and get a few games in. But Zombie Dice is a really good pick.
Awesome.
Dang. All right. Our next one is for that Ameritrasher in your life. The guy that likes to have fun when he plays games. He throws dice. Oh, did I say that? He throws dice. You know, luck's not a bad thing. What gift do you give the Ameritrasher in your life?
All right. This is a slightly uncommon pick. Because it kind of falls in on a line between Ameritrash and non-Ameritrash. But I selected Lords of Vegas.
Oh.
Because that's a game that, from Mayfair Games. We've talked about it and did a review of it a couple episodes ago. But it's got a lot of elements that feel Euro-ish as far as building casinos. But that dice element and the wheeling and dealing trading element feels very Ameritrashy to me. And when you do that stand-up roll where you're going to reorganize a casino and you roll 15 dice to see if you're going to end up being the boss, that's Ameritrash at its finest right there.
That's a good pick.
All right. So what'd you pick?
I had to pick Rune Wars in this case.
Oh, that's a good pick.
You know, it has a box you can be buried in. It's just full of chrome. It has little plastic mountains really for no reason.
Yeah.
And it, you know, takes like 4 hours for a full game. So you can't go wrong there. So
that's a good one. That's a really good
Thank
game.
Thank you. So Rune Wars is my pick.
All right, now, so on the other side of that coin, and I know this is probably a tricky one for you to come up with.
It was hard, yes.
What is it'd be the gift for a Euro gamer if you happen to – you're not friends with any Euro gamers, are you?
I'm not willingly, no.
You tend to avoid them, no.
No.
So what would your pick be for a gift to give a hardcore Euro gamer?
This may seem like kind of a cop-out, but I would say Thebes.
Oh, really?
I couldn't think of any. Okay. And it would be one where you could sucker in people to try your longer and more boring Euro games. You're like, well, let's play Thebes. It's got some Euro elements. And then you're like, let's play Power Grid. Let's play. You
know, the gateway to boredom, right? Is that what you're saying?
The path to gaming boredom.
Oh, that's sad. Very
sorry,
sad.
Euro gamers.
All right. Well, for my Euro game, I selected Fresco, which I know you haven't even played. You haven't even played it.
What?
You just need to stop.
Oh, sorry.
It's a really, really good game. I mentioned it a whole bunch on the show about painting and stuff, but that's a great one.
So I've avoided it so far.
If you are a Euro gamer out there, you owe it to yourself to try Fresco. It is a fantastic game.
Oh, holy night. The stars are brightly shining. It is the night.
All right, so we've rolled through some of our kind of fun categories of suggestions for games that you could get for your loved ones, your not-so-loved ones, your Euro gamer, your Ameritrash gamer. And so now it comes down to the two most important people on this podcast, me and Cody.
Right.
And we're going to talk about the games that are at the top of our Christmas list for what we want to get. And so, Cody, let's start with you. What for this year, 2010, what's at the very top of your Christmas list? Gaming wise,
there is a lot to choose from.
Oh yeah, it's been a good year.
Helsinki Crokinole Board, notwithstanding.
Okay,
you know, I played Pony Express recently, and I really liked it.
Uh-huh.
Not quite at the top. You know, I'm kind of on a Memoir 44 kick, so you know, getting that campaign bag stuffed with all the expansions,
yeah,
also good. But
nice.
I had to say, I really want to try Hammer of the Scots.
Really,
the war game. Yeah.
Okay,
it's something that it's harder to find in game stores. You know, you usually have to get them directly from the manufacturer there.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm a big kind of like Scottish buff, and I like stuff like that. And I think, and I've heard this is a good, you know, first or second step war game. So It's like I said, either that or the Memoir 44 back stuff to the gills with stuff. But I would really like to try Hammer of the Scots.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, went a different direction there, didn't I?
Yeah, that's kind of an older game, so that one's not one that's difficult to find or anything.
No.
So, you know, that's a possibility.
No. What about you?
All right, well, I've almost kind of given it away because I mentioned it so many times on this show so far, but Seven Wonders is at the top of my list, and I'm hoping that it'll come in the next couple of weeks. I've already ordered it. That's definitely no nothing more to say about that game. I think it's a great one. And
I didn't get you Seven Wonders for Christmas.
That's fine. I got it for myself.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, it's better than last year, because last year my pick was Founding Fathers, which I thought was going to come out in like the year, like February, and it came out in like June. Mm-hmm. So this one I'm hopefully can
Christmas
have
in June.
Yeah, something like that. So anyway, so I hope you enjoyed our gift guide. Just kind of a brief look at some of the games that have come out in the last couple years that might be fun for you to put under your tree. And with that, hey, you ready to move on to some inbox?
Sure.
Must write 'em. So it's another Christmas song. Santa Claus singing on naughty snow. Reindeer ringing in the mistletoe. The manger's on fire. The holly's aglow. Hear the baby Jesus crying. Ho, ho, ho.
All right, it's time for the Game On Inbox, where we read your lovingly handwritten correspondence to us.
Sealed with a kiss.
Sealed with a kiss. Hopefully not. We do have something interesting to lead off the inbox. We have a guest correspondent, if you will.
Yeah.
Mr. Scott Nicholson of Board Games with Scott and On Board Games fame, I believe.
Love that guy.
Yeah, he is. My favorite story is still, you know, my wife who's a librarian, you know, Scott Nicholson, a very accomplished librarian, you know, talks about gaming in libraries. And I think she was reading something by him or watching one of his like library videos. And I came in the room. I'm like, "You're watching Scott Nicholson?" It's like, she's like, "How do you know Scott Nicholson?"
So she knew him from a completely different arena in life.
Huh? He is everywhere and nowhere. He's a guy I'd love to meet. He's just such a nice guy. And he is quite the LARPer. So he had kind of a recorded response to our LARP episode. And take it away, Scott.
Why, hello there, Cody and John. This is Scott Nicholson. I'm host of Board Games with Scott and a voice on the On Board Games podcast. I listened to your recent episode on LARPing, and I felt compelled to write in and do a little recording about a type of LARP that you all didn't talk much about. Now, just like in normal gaming, you talk about LARP being the butt of people's jokes. In the LARPing world, the Boffo LARP is the butt of LARPers' jokes. In fact, it was the butt of your joke where you talked about the Dark Lord of Denny's. But the reality is, these Boffo LARPs, or action LARPs as I like to call them, provide a very different live-action role-playing experience. And someone going to a convention like Gen Con or Origins will find that some of these LARPs are action LARPs. So I thought it was important to talk a little bit about the action LARP, what someone might expect to do in an action LARP, what they're all about, how they're different from, you've talked about on this show, the True Dungeon, which is a puzzle-style LARP, and you've talked about then theater LARPing, which is the World of Darkness LARPing, and a lot of the one-shots, the fiction-based LARPing. I mean, I've done all of that. I've actually been a big fan of LARPing for a long time. In fact, I even put video of me doing it on one of my Board Games with Scott episodes. So I'm sure in many people's minds, my presence as a gamer diminished when they saw me running around in a cape, swinging weapons, shouting numbers at each other. But anyway. So action LARPs, the focus in an action LARP is going to be the combat. It's going to be swinging padded weapons, which are either made of latex rubber, or they are bamboo or PVC covered with some sort of foam like pipe insulation and then wrapped in duct tape and or cloth. So these weapons are going to represent swords and staves and pole arms and things like that. There may be some sort of a missile weapon representation with some sort of a bow that you use, or the beanbags that you throw. There may be something that you throw to represent spells, or spells may be completely virtual. Just like with theater LARPs, there are national LARPing groups, national action LARP groups, and local one-shot action LARPs. The national groups are sanctioned, so the idea is that if you play a character in one national group in a location, you can take that character to another location and play the next weekend. Two of the big groups, one is the IFGS, the International Fantasy Gaming Society, and the other is NERO, N-E-R-O. And both of these organizations are nationwide, and I actually was involved with the IFGS for about 10 years. I did a lot of work in game creation and game design, as well as playing a non-player character in these games. Now, the way these games are different is that they are going to focus on the combat. There is a story that's going on. Can be role-playing that people are involved with, but it's nowhere near to the depth of what you have with the theater-style LARPing. So in the acronym of LARP, Live Action Role-Playing, the action LARPs focus more on the action part, less on the role-playing part. Now, that's not always true. There are some places that do more heavy role-playing segments, but in general, the focus is more on the action. Now, there are many times these are done outside at campgrounds or in forests, things like that, or in public parks. I've done a lot of these in parks. They can be done in hotels, but you have to watch a lot for making sure everything is clear before you start swinging 6-foot weapons about in a hotel. So the way that these LARPs work is you, as a player, you will be given a character. Now, many times the characters are much less in depth than in a theater LARP. You'll be more focused on the statistics of your character. So if you're playing a priest, you know, you will have a weapon that does so much damage. You'll have some healing abilities. You may have some other abilities in the game, and that's going to be your character. And then it's up to you to provide who you want to play and what your story is. So it's a bit more like many tabletop LARPs, where you're given statistics and you round out that character with whoever it is you want to be playing. Now, the way these will work is, so you're in a party of people, you may go to the first encounter, and there's someone sitting on a throne, and they say, "I am the king of so-and-so, my princess has been captured, you must go save them," and you negotiate for a reward, and then off you go. But as you're leaving, then someone from the court pulls you aside and says, "Well, you need to know, the king is not all he appears to be. He has actually captured the princess himself, and I suggest you go over here to try and figure out what's going on." Now, in some action LARPs, they will set up an entire town, village, city, continent, in a physical space, and so you can decide as a player where you want to go next. Other action LARPs are linear in that you'll have a series of encounters, one after the other, that have been pre-planned, and you'll move from space to space to have these encounters. So many of the one-shots in a hotel, they'll take a large ballroom, they'll split that ballroom up with like PVC framing and tarps, and you'll go from encounter to encounter throughout that ballroom, engaging with the story. In the woods, you have things laid out where you start in one area, then move to another, and move to another. One thing that's different is these action LARPs require a much larger number of NPCs to pull off, because you need to have one NPC per zombie for a horde of zombies. You need to have the person playing the king. You need to have the person playing the princess. You can usually double up on roles, but the reality is that you need to have more people helping to run the game. In the national LARPs, you get rewarded for helping to run the game by getting experience that you can apply to your characters. As your characters complete a game in a national LARP, you do get more powerful. You get more abilities, you get more items, and you can then take those into a different adventure. And the adventures are presented as for different levels of characters. So you may have an adventure that's for levels 3 through 5 characters. So as you get stronger, you're going to be fighting stronger monsters. Now, these buffo LARPs don't always have you swinging padded weapons at each other. Sometimes they have you shooting guns. So at the last Origins, I played in 3 different action LARPs. One was using buffo weapons, a lot like what we talked about here. One used airsoft pistols, which are pistols that shoot little foam pellets that you can still tell you're hit, but they don't really hurt that much. This one was set in a military setting where you were going into an abandoned spaceship, and you were one of a military team, and you had different sorts of guns, and you were going in to find the survivors, to find some tech that had been left behind. And in this particular LARP, it was a WYSIWYG LARP. What you see is what you get LARP, meaning whatever you saw in that space is what you saw. There was no GM describing anything. You had to use your eyes, and it was all dark, so you were given flashlights. So you were having to use your eyes, you were having to watch what was going on, and of course it was kind of like a haunted house with bad things jumping out at you and going boogie, boogie, boogie. In that particular game, I played a medic. So I had ropes with knots in them. So if one of my party members took damage, I could kneel over them and untie a knot, and that was like me healing them. So, and the time it took me to untie the knot is the time it took me to heal them. And of course, there was combat going on around you. So you'd have actually puzzles you were trying to solve while bad guys were coming in, and it was a chaotic time. Another one that I did at Origins was a cyberpunk LARP. And in this one, you actually had laser guns, like from laser tag. And so in this one, you again had different roles. In this particular game, I played a hacker. And I was given a card with different computer commands. And the story is that we were being sent into a system to figure out what was going wrong and deal with it. And so within the system, there were hacking terminals, which were actual computers running a program. I had to go in and I had to use fairly complex codes in order to access the system, to figure out what's going on, to get information, and then record that information and then bring that out with me. I had a USB key that I could use to download information, but I'd also have to write some things down that we would need for later on. But of course, wherever I'm sitting there hacking a terminal, all of a sudden, intruder alert, bad guys come up. So the fighters on the team are busy trying to beat off the bad guys. So, for example, this was set in a series of hotel rooms. So at one point, the terminal was in a bathroom up on the sink. And so a big fight was going on outside. I was kneeled down under the sink. I would pop up, type in a few characters, and pop back down. At one point, I heard this noise, and this foam grenade had been thrown into the bathroom where I was hacking. So I turned around, you know, grabbed it, chunked it back out in the hallway, went back to typing, heard an explosion, you know, and so it was exciting. So in these action LARPs, it's very much based upon what you can can do, and that's the disadvantage of them. You have to be able to do what it is you want to do. If you want to play a fighter, you have to have some fighting skills. They give you some abilities in the game that can help you out, but the reality is, if you don't have fighting skills, you should probably not play a fighting character. The same thing is true with other physical things. You may have rope bridges across or things to jump, and you have to actually be able to do it. So this was frustrating to me, so I actually got together with some friends, and we wrote a system that still kept the excitement of Bafo weapons without actually having to physically fight. When Chaosium, which was a role-playing game company, heard that we had this system, they were developing a live role-playing game, and they got this system from us and integrated it into their role-playing game. And this is where my first game publication came from. So if you look at the Call of Cthulhu live-scale role-playing game first edition, you'll see I'm one of the co-authors of that. So for me, action LARPing led to my first game publication. So it's not all bad. If you want to do an action LARP at a convention, I would suggest you wear very comfortable clothing, wear comfortable shoes. You may even want knee pads if you have bad knees, because in many of these games you end up kneeling as you take damage. You take a knee, so you may want to have some knee pads along. I have come away with carpet burns. I've come away with small strains and things like that, because it is physically engaging. But it's the closest you get to actually playing a video game. Because it is exciting, your adrenaline's pumping, you're actually in the space and having a good time. So, that's action LARPing, that's what that's all about. Yes, it does mean afterwards you're all excited and you go hang out at Denny's and you can go be the Dark Lord of Denny's as well, which is not such a bad thing. So, thank you Cody and John for airing this little bit, and now it's time to get back to Game On with Cody and John.
Scott. Okay. The Dark Lord of Denny's was not a jab at the Bafo LARP.
No,
that was the LARP I was in, the Vampire World of Darkness stuff.
Yeah.
That's when you'd have the people that would wear the cloaks and, you know, I'm the prince of the city and I will have the Grand Slam, you know.
We have nothing but the utmost respect for all LARPers.
That's correct.
Be it Bafo or non-Bafo.
I saw a good documentary once. And first I want to thank Scott for taking the time to record that segment.
Oh, yeah. That was really interesting.
Thank
you,
Scott.
And really interesting about how he got his first game publication through LARPing stuff. That's
very
really cool.
There's an interesting documentary. I believe it's called Darkon, like Darkon, and it just follows some of the people that play a particular type of Bafo LARP. I don't know which camp they fall in there, but it was pretty interesting. And in college, we had a medieval combat club, which is basically like Bafo weapons, but without the story. We just kind of just ran at each other and swung weapons. Right, it was fun. Uh-huh. But it's something that I would like to try. I don't know if I'd have the time commitment to do it all the time, but I think it would be neat just to run around, hit people with foam weapons and all that.
Yeah.
But watching that documentary made me want to try it out. But anyway, thank you, Scott. We assure you we were not making fun of the Bafo LARP.
No.
And the Dark Lord of Denny's lies with all vampire players everywhere. And I can make fun of it because I was under the Dark Lord's rule for many years. So.
Oh, did you get the Grand Slam? the Grand Slam of Darkness?
I would like sausage links.
Oh, my. One other thing about the Bafo LARPs is interesting is that they had some of the folks from Amtgard, I think?
Yeah, Amtgard.
They had the booth at Gen Con where you could build a foam weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just amazed by how serious they were about it. I spent the $10 for my son and I to go and just, be able to build them. I want to just build them a sword. Yeah, that's pretty cool. But man, they were, here's what you do, and you wrap the tape like this. And so I'm sitting here trying to do it, and I'm like, man, my son's like 7 here, and he's just like, can we leave now? I'm like, no, I gotta do this. The guy is looking really serious at me, and so I put the tape around, and he comes in, and he messes with it, and he's like, you need to put more on there. And it's like, he's like, you're preparing me for battle.
Yeah.
And he wants to make sure that I have a sound weapon.
Well, part of it's safety, and then part of it's just the regulations of the game.
Yeah.
What was cool about when I was in college was you had one guy. I think he did like Amp Guard on the weekends or something. When he went home. But his whole dorm room was just full of foam weapons. So I was,
wow.
I was pole arm guy, which that was fun. I don't even want to think how hard it was to make that. But I basically had this big padded glaive that was just poking people and slamming. It was fun.
That's exciting stuff. Yeah.
Don't give me that look. I had fun.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, to get away from the Bafo LARP, we have an email from Justin Nordstrom who, talks to us about war games.
Uh-oh.
He says, a while ago, over the summer, I think, you asked Game On listeners to call in and discuss the podcast. I left a short message suggesting that alongside your coverage of miniatures, RPGs, CCGs, board games, and other games, you might devote some time to war games. I know you've been working on other projects, but I'm prompted to write this follow-up because of the recent BGG announcement that Washington's War won the best two-player game at BGGCon this month. Any reaction, by the way, to those awards?
No.
Moving on. Given the broad coverage of gaming...
They're fine awards. Well done.
Given the broad coverage of gaming on Game On, you guys are the only podcast I listen to that covers such an expanse of the gaming hobby.
Thank you.
I wonder if I could nudge you again towards considering wargaming. So... what do you think? I mean, it's definitely on tap, and we're not just blowing smoke at it.
Yeah, no, the last couple months we've had on the docket the war game episode, because mm-hmm. we want to try out a couple of war games and, again, give you our newbie gamer perspective on to different kinds of gaming, broaden your horizons.
That's right. We have Combat Commander Europe ready to go.
Right, and I, you know, we may want to pick this one up, Washington's War, because I hear it's a good introductory game that might be a step between maybe Combat Commander Europe and something like Memoir 44, which is a lot more simple.
And we're both big American history buffs.
Big American history buffs, yeah.
So, you know, that might be a win-win there.
All right, so be looking for that in, you know, I don't want to make any promises because, you know, you never know what might change. In the next month or two, I think, you know, we're definitely going to get that together. It just requires a lot of focused time commitment for Cody and I to sit down and do two-player stuff. And usually we're getting together with a couple of other people and playing, you know, larger group stuff. So just require a little bit more focused time. But, you know, we are very interested in trying these games out and giving your opinion on them. So thanks for kind of the prodding there, Justin.
We appreciate it.
We'll try to get those to the table soon.
Now, we had a few emails that talked about the multi-game formats or the tournament scoring sort of things.
Yeah, we got this email from Eric Freeman. And he says, Cody and John just finished listening to your last show. Thank you, as always, for your efforts there. Anyway, in your email from listeners, you mentioned that that his group needed a way to run a multi-game tournament format. The convention EuroQuest has established a format that does basically this. Then he gives a link to where you can see the rules. We'll put those in the show notes there.
I will put those in the show notes.
That's right. Oh, you do the show notes now, don't you? That's awesome. Yay.
Dang.
essentially, it handles the issues as you outline them by making more points available for longer titles or for higher number of players, while also in general awarding points for placings other than first. The system provides only positive points, so it advantages those players more often. So it's a good system when everyone has the same opportunity and time frame within which to score points. If his group, and he's referring to another email that we had gotten, this guy's group has many members show up sporadically and some every time. Those that show up more often are much more likely to score the most points. Depending on your point of view, this can be taken as a positive or negative. In regards, Eric. This is very interesting to me. I don't know. First, I've just been thinking about this the last couple of weeks, that this whole idea of having a tournament system, some kind of incentive to show up, not hyper-competitive, but just a way to, you know...
A fun end of the year or end of the season, however you want to do it.
Yeah.
Way of just... And it's good to go back and see, oh, yeah, I remember when I played that, when you beat me at that, or when I beat you at that, and blah, blah, blah.
But then also having points for a second or third place finish, so that if you get in the middle of a game of Lords of Vegas and you know you're so far behind you're not going to win, that you still stick with it to get that second place victory or second place, so you can get the points for that. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. In a way, it sort of reminds me of the Origins boardroom. They have like the... what do they call it? The chairman of the board, where it's like for the person who wins the most games. But it's kind of this really nebulous thing where when you play a game, you can fill out a sheet saying that you won and you get everybody to sign it so that it proves that you won. And so it sort of keeps track of it. But
I would always think that would be kind of a jerk thing to do. Sign this writ of destruction.
And you know, but, and so it's only the people that are A, winning games, and B, making sure that they write it down, you know. But if it's something that's just incorporated in the entire group and everybody's aware of it, but it's just for fun, I think that's a really good idea. You know?
Yeah.
I got to give that some thought, more thought. So, Eric, thanks so much for that link, and we'll definitely check that out.
Now, we have one other email kind of on the same lines from Adam Dalton from the greatest city in the world, Indianapolis, Indiana.
Woo.
He says, hi, Cody and John. Hi.
Hello.
Just listened to your episode 55. I enjoyed it. That seems like he's surprised. I wanted to comment on the question that was presented about a tournament or league format for board gaming. I've hosted gaming for the past 6 years and have continued to keep those stats for all of those years. Yeah, pretty cool.
Wow.
Similar to the other listener, each player gets points for each opponent they beat. This is then divided by the number of games they played throughout the year to give them a rating. At the end of the year, we hand out a Gamer of the Year award to the person with the best rating. It's fun for me to see the stats, and our group enjoys the prodding throughout the year. Of course, with multiple games and number of players and times it takes to play the games, the system will never be perfect, but for the most part, it does a generally good job of indicating our better players. The important thing, though, is that it's not really important, and we don't emphasize it in order for metagaming not to occur. Keep up the good show. And, you know, I think he hit on what we were saying.
Yeah.
Keep it to where it's on the back burner, but, you know, to where it's not such a big deal that everyone's just playing for that prize.
Because I think one reason why some people play games is they're not competitive people. You know, they maybe they'll play to win the game, but because you should.
Yeah, you don't play to just play.
You don't play to just play. You play to win the game. But, you know, they might not like that sort of that confrontational aspect. That's why they like games like Dominion, you know, where you sort of do your own thing, and if you come out on top, great. And if you
definitely don't want to have a big scoreboard,
right?
You know, our current standings are. You might send emails out every now, you know, once a month or something.
But. Yeah, or just have like real discreet little pieces of paper that you could turn into the keeper of all the scores. But I think it would add a really fun element. So
let me read this next one to you.
Go ahead.
This is from another indie listener, Ryan. Wow. You know, we need to have like another wing night or something to get all these people together.
Oh, wings sound great. Let's do that. Yeah, let's put that
right
together.
Right now. Ryan in Indy says, hey, Ryan from Indy again. Just wanted to say that I loved your last episode.
Thanks, Ryan.
Every time I hear you talk about minis games, I get excited to hear your thoughts and experiences, but then I'm saddened since my current life responsibilities make it tough to meet up and game with my buddies.
I understand.
I find it interesting that you guys prefer 40K to War Machine. Well. Almost everyone I talk to is moving the opposite direction, longtime 40K players coming over to War Machine. You didn't mention on the podcast, but didn't you guys dabble in AT43 as well? How would you say that whole system stacks up to War Machine and 40K? John?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm not sure if we necessarily said that we liked 40K better than War Machine. Maybe we did say that, but, but I'm not – the jury's still out for me on that.
I would agree.
I think on the first play, I was just surprised by the ease of play. I know there's a lot of complexity that we didn't include in our little test game of 40K, but I was just – the overall system and how you roll the dice and how you resolve damage – I was expecting it to be this convoluted, super complicated thing, and it wasn't. And that was just very appealing to me. But, I mean, there's still a lot about War Machine that I really, really like. The models just I think I like better than the 40K models in general. So
Don't lose heart, War Machine players. We still like it.
That's right. We still play it regularly. But I you're right. We did try AT40.
We?
Oh, this is why you wanted me to say this, because you wanted me to confession number two. First one was the Xbox, and now we want to talk about AT43. Okay,
tell them about the first and second time you bought AT43.
Several years ago at Gen Con, when AT43 first came out, I had a bit of a lapse in judgment and purchased way too much AT43 stuff. And the reason why I was excited about it is because it was a miniatures game, like a real miniatures game, like 40K, but didn't involve all the hobby aspects of it. And that was a time in my life when I thought, painting, assembling minis, I don't even want to do it, you know, but I do like to play. So I thought this would be just perfect for me, and it has, you know, all the different factions, all that kind of stuff. So I was very enamored with it, and I bought a bunch of stuff. But here's where I went wrong. Here's one of the ways that I went wrong, is I thought, well, Cody will play with me, but Cody's not going to buy a bunch of stuff. So I'll need to buy two full armies, and then he'll play with me. And that's just not the way you do – that's not the way to do a miniatures game.
Sorry.
I'll just tell you, any miniatures game, if you've never done it before, just buy your army. Build your own army, and don't think that you can get two armies and get someone else to play with you.
At most, just one of the starter packs that are out there.
Yeah.
Don't buy a whole army.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, I would consider buying like a second battle group box of War Machine to play with like my father-in-law when he comes into town.
Right.
Just play a small game of that because he's never played before. But – anyway, so I bought all this stuff, and then we never really played. I think I went to a game store where it was being played a little bit. I played a couple of games of that, and it was fun, but it never really stuck at the game store. And I ended up trading all of my AT43 stuff for a pretty big stack of board games with this one Board Game Geek user.
There you go.
And I felt very happy about the board games that I got for it. So that was the main reason behind that. Now, then came that giant evil... that is known as the Fantasy Flight Games Holiday Sale, which is going on right now, I believe.
And AT43 is available.
And AT43 is available because that game was by Rackham. Fantasy Flight like bought the license for it or the distribution rights or something like that. And then the game really has not gone very well, I don't think. And so everything is super discounted. It's been super discounted for the last couple of years. And so I always... you know, we've gotten a couple of emails actually that have asked about this, about, you know, well, I'm thinking about getting an AT43. We figure that you probably want to get into AT43 because of the Fantasy Flight game sale. Let me just tell you, I think it's a good game, you know, and I think that the dice system and the combat resolution, the fluff of the game, I think is very cool. The artwork on the books is really nice.
The miniatures are nice.
I think the miniatures are pretty nice. And people who are hardcore painters would probably look at those miniatures and say, I could do a better job. But, you know, if you like the hobby aspect of things, don't get this game because that's already been removed for you. You know, everything's already painted and, modifying your miniatures, you can put different arms on like the different robots and stuff, and you can do that a little bit, but the game is really more about the play than it is about the hobby part of it. And I think that's where the failing of the game is that if you're going to be a hobby miniatures game, then be a hobby miniatures game. If you're going to be like a HeroScape style game, be that. But this was trying to bridge that gap and trying to bring in all those people that liked HeroScape and liked board games to try to get them into a miniatures game. And I just don't think that you can separate that hobby aspect from the game. It's too integral of a part of it.
And it's too hard to justify the cost of the mini.
That is very true.
If you're not painting it and putting it together, it's like, you know, $40 for this little action figure, essentially? It's like, yeah. No way.
Because the price point when it first came out was, I mean, it was on par with if you got a box of Space Marines that you had to put together and get all the enjoyment of the hobby part of it, you were paying the same amount for the same number of models for AT43, but they were already painted for you.
Right.
And it seemed like a little bit too much of an expense just to have something to play with. Prices are really low right now. You know, I think the gameplay is pretty cool. So, I mean, if you got the money to spend on it and you know, you want to grab up some stuff, then I think it's worthwhile. But I just would give that caution, I guess. You know, that's, and like I said, the Fantasy Flight sale came along and I bought the I bought the starter again, the Operation Damocles big starter box. I still have it. And I mean, I still think we might pull it out, especially since we're more into miniatures games now. We might pull it out and, you know, try a little game of it. I think I'm probably better equipped to play it now because I understand how miniatures games work a little bit better. But having said that, proceed with caution with AT43, I would say.
Very good.
Thanks for the email, Ryan.
What else we got?
All right, we got from Mike Amos, Michael Amos, a question about game groups. He said, I love the show, and your GM Academy got me to trying out RPGing.
Awesome.
That's great. I was looking for a board game group at the time and was having trouble getting anything together. I started a group of D&D instead. We played for 3 months. I'm the GM, and most of the players are new to the game as of this campaign. Well, that's cool to get new players in. The problem is I don't actually enjoy it.
Oh.
I really want to play board games. I found enough people with whom I can play board games to constitute a group. So I'm thinking about pulling the plug on the RPG thing. The problem is I feel bad about it. I know that some, if not all of them, enjoy playing D&D with me. It's just that I don't like it. It's just for fun, so I guess I don't owe them anything, but I feel bad nonetheless. Any thoughts here on what to do, or more importantly, how to do it? And so he also says, for your information, as you consider my problem, just for the record, I just bumped them up to level 3. We play every other week for 4 hours. I serve a meal each time and host each game, none of that would change for board games. We'd just be playing different games, which is really all I want to change. Do you think for Michael there?
I know you feel bad because, you know, the people are really enjoying the campaign. And this is something, you know, I've come across, you know, in my time. And your free time and your hobby time is so valuable that if you're not having fun and in your own world, you're just not actually enjoying it. You just have to be, you know, just straight up with your group. Just say, you know, look, I'm not having fun doing this. You know, I don't think this is for me anymore. You know, we want to do board games. You know, we have enough people to do board games. Nothing's going to change. You know, just kind of entice them with that. It's like, you know, you got a place to play. You know, we're going to do a meal. We're going to do some board games for a while. Maybe we'll do the RPG stuff down the line. Maybe someone else wants to run something. But for now, I'd just like to do board games. I apologize. You know, it would just be, you know, say you're sorry. It's like, you know, sorry, we're going to cut it short. But, you know, I'm just really not having fun. And, you know, I think it would take a real jerk of a person, you know, to say, you know, to get mad at you over that. If you're just being very forthcoming and saying, look, it's just not fun for me, I'd rather do board games, especially since you're hosting and preparing a meal, they can't fault you for that. You know, you just need to drop it on them and be completely just honest and upfront with them, and I think you'll get a lot better response out of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it might have to do with how you found these friends, because he said that he couldn't find board game group, and so he started a D&D group. Now, the people that he attracted in for the D&D group were just role players, you know. Then I could see that being a little bit of a more difficult. The people that we play role playing games with, they like board games and card games too. So yeah. if we ever suggested, hey, instead of doing this, let's do board games for a while, they'd be like, ah, that's fine. We'll pick up the RPG some other time. But if you definitely had folks that were just hardcore role players and that's all that they did, then I could see it being a little bit more of a challenge to do that. But yeah, like Cody said, just be polite about it. And, you know, you're definitely giving a lot in this situation. You're spending the time GMing the game, you're hosting, you're preparing a meal. Can we come to your house?
Exactly.
I'd be fine with that. I'll play board games, but just be polite about it, and just maybe just to bring it up as a suggestion of, hey, could we put this on hold for a while and try some board games? You know, you could even present it that way, of not just a, hey, we're done with RPGs, we're doing board games. You know,
I think you need a middle ground though. I don't think you bring it up as a suggestion. I think you, because he's flat out saying he doesn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't think you say, all right, listen up, pukes, we're done. You know, the gravy train ends here, we're doing board games.
Uh-huh.
I think, you show some contrition over it, but you can't leave it open-ended. I think, you know, having been in this position, you have to say, you know, we're going to take kind of a, what's the word? Like a
sabbatical?
we don't know if, when we're going to pick it up, sort of thing.
An indefinite hiatus?
Indefinite. That's the word I was looking for. Okay. Yeah. You know, just like, you know, we may pick it up, but for now, you know, we're going to do board games. If you don't want to come, I understand, but, you know, we're going to keep doing it just because I'm not having fun.
Yeah.
I think you can't leave the door that wide open.
Yeah.
You know?
And you could even say if the other people in the group are really enjoying the D&D thing, pass the GMing mantle on to somebody else, you know, onto one of the other people in the group, if they want to continue their thing,
right,
you know, in another venue, you know, and then at the same time you could say, hey, you know, but let's do board, when you're with me, let's do board games.
Yeah. And you might even, if there's enough organized player in your area with RPGA, with Living Forgotten Realms, you may pass them on to that, and, you know, that's a good way to get your fix, but you can still come over here and do board games.
Yeah.
So very good questions, Mike. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike.
I think that wraps up all of the emails.
All right. Well, that's great.
Well,
we had a lot of good emails. I love getting emails.
I do, too.
You know, we've just been getting more and more, and we really appreciate this is the reason why we devote a whole segment to this. I don't really know of a whole lot of other podcasts that really read a whole lot of emails, but we appreciate it so much, and we feel like we can learn from you guys, and hopefully we can, you know, impart a little bit of, you know, our lame wisdom on you. But we would encourage you, if you have any questions or any comments or anything you want to say to us, to write us. And how can they write us?
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Are you sure?
That was a little awkward there.
Yeah. gameoninbox@gmail.com, or that you can also send or leave a voicemail at the Game On hotline.
4138 Game On.
That's right. It's 413-842-6366. And yeah, if you leave us a voicemail, we're likely to play it on the air, because we don't get a whole lot of voicemails.
Right.
So, you know, feel free to call in and say something. So that just about wraps it up. You ready to close the show out?
I say we do it.
Let's do this.
Not very much of his childhood was known. Kept his mother Mary worried, always out on his own. Met another Mary who, for a reasonable fee, less than reputable, was known to.
Well, that was another successful episode of Game On with Cody and John, if I do say so myself.
And you do.
And I do. John's got some news for you, though, for our next episode.
Oh, it might be some sad news, or it might be some great news for you. I don't know. But we've decided we're going to take a one-episode break for the holiday season here for Christmas. And so, you know, this episode is coming out the week of December the 7th. And so we're not going to release an episode the week of Christmas, the week of the 21st. But we'll be back 2 weeks after that. So around the first of the year is when we'll bring you another great episode of Game On. But we're going to take some time to spend time with our families, do holiday stuff, and play lots of games.
Yes,
so
sir.
We'll have lots to talk about when we come back. But we hope that you have a great Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever
Festivus,
holiday.
Kwanzaa.
That's right. Whatever holiday you celebrate around this time of year, we hope you have a great one. We do appreciate you listening to us. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at GameOnPodcast.com. Join our guild on BoardGameGeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!